Hi, this is Megan Francis, and you're listening to the Kitchen Hour podcast. I'm here to keep you company while you get dinner on the table and help you set aside more time for family, food, and fun. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 15 of the Kitchen Hour podcast. We're about in the middle of December now, and if you celebrate Christmas, you're probably knee-deep in gifts and decorations like we are. Just a reminder that over at thehappiesthome.com, there is a giveaway going on right now that will last through the week. So go check that out. We've got several great products there. We've got pajamas from Sarah's Prince. We've got clothing from the Tea Collection. We've got a great easel from One Step Ahead and some other goodies that you are definitely going to want to get in on. So just really easy to enter. All you have to do is leave a comment. It's random. Really simple. Go to thehappiesthome.com and just go back to Monday's posts and you'll find the giveaway. I'll also put a link to the giveaways themselves in today's show notes at thekitchenhour.com/episode15. Today, I'm really excited to bring you an interview with my friend Danielle Smith. Danielle has a background in TV and does a lot of video in addition to being a blogger. And Danielle and I met last year. We had kind of known each other via other people for years, but had never really talked, I don't think, in person ever. I don't think we had really ever connected on a personal basis. And we were at a conference together, just happened to be at the same time, and we'd been sort of trying to connect at a conference and have a real conversation. It had never happened. And so finally, one of us texted the other and said, hey, we're going to meet at this wine bar. Let's just grab a quick drink and sit and talk. So I think we scheduled like a half an hour for it. And so we sat down and 5 o'clock or something, and ended up blowing off everything else for the whole night. And we're still sitting there at 9 o'clock at night, and finally had to go, you know, to this event, to the very end of this event, because we had just talked for the entire evening. So it was a great friendship, the start of a great friendship. And since then, we've worked on several projects together. And our most recent is a new live broadcast that we are doing every Wednesday at 1 o'clock Eastern called the New Having It All Show. It's on Google Plus, which if you're not on Google Plus, you might not really be aware of how they do live broadcasts. So there's something called a hangout on air. It's basically she's in her house, I'm in my house, we're both on camera, we're talking to each other. We can take questions from the audience who can like type to us in the sidebar of the hangout. We can see that come up, and it's been really fun. We did one last Wednesday, Wednesday the 4th, and now we've got another one coming up today. I believe that probably when this podcast gets published, we won't yet have done the show. So you still have a chance to come check it out. I will leave a link to where you can go see the show live in the show notes. If you can't catch it live, you can watch it on YouTube later. There's a recording and they all get recorded and archived. So you can go back and watch all the episodes. It's really fun. The New Having It All show is really about, what does it mean to have it all today? Is it even possible? How do we make all these different parts of our lives, our families, our work, our hobbies, our friends, our relationships, all these different things work together and kind of come together into the kind of life that we want to live? And what does it mean to have it all? And is it possible? And is it possible that maybe we need to redefine what it means to have it all? I think yes. The answer is yes. And that's kind of what the show is about. We'll talk about that more today. We're also going to talk, we had a great time recording this interview. We talk about everything from Danielle's background in TV, and she's got this really, really great story. So emotional about why she decided to get out of television. And her husband were both in TV actually. So she talks a little bit about that and how we're now sort of forging these new careers online and how much this space has meant to us in our ability to kind of redefine and reinvent who we are and what our careers are and make them work around our family lives. We also talk a little bit about having a big second act. Danielle just turned 40 and is looking forward to maybe relaunching her career in a new way. And it's really cool to watch it happen. And, you know, I'm approaching 40. I'm not really even that close to it yet, but I'll be there in a few years. And I really love to watch that as an example of how you know, you aren't defined by your age. There's no limit. It's not like when you get to be 40 or 50 or any age that suddenly whatever career you're in, that's where you are or you haven't peaked. I mean, we still have so much life ahead of us. And now we've got these tools that we can just really reinvent ourselves. And I think that's really cool. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and get into the interview now. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Danielle Smith. Hi, everyone. I am here with Danielle Smith, who is the author of the blog ExtraordinaryMommy.com. She's a TV personality, a video personality, a good friend of mine. And now she and I are launching a new project together that we'll tell you about in a minute. Welcome, Danielle.
Thank you, Megan, for having me.
You're very welcome. I'm glad you're here. We've had so much fun together. We are doing a series of Google Hangouts, and I don't know if everybody who's listening is aware of what a Google Hangout is. So I'm just going to go into a real quick description of what it actually is. It's essentially, we have an online show using the Google platform. So it's a hangout on air. You can watch it live, or you can watch it later on YouTube, or you can watch it live apparently on YouTube if you have the link. I don't exactly know how to make that work yet. We're still sort of in the process of figuring all that out. But it's a lifestyle show, and it's called the New Having It All Show, where we are talking about what it means to have it all in today's world. And that is something that I think that we're going to focus on a lot today, because I think that the phrase having it all has gotten really skewed, and it means something that I don't think anyone can really have. And I think that we've seen that proven over and over again with articles about how you can't have it all. So I'm really glad to have Danielle here so we can talk about that. So Danielle, tell us a little bit about yourself so that the audience can get to know you.
Okay. Well, let's see. I guess I'll start with the website. So I have ExtraordinaryMommy.com is my primary site. It's lifestyle and parenting. And then my secondary site is Danielle Smith Media. And that's where I do my correspondent and media training and all that good stuff. My background, my traditional background, is in television. So I met my husband doing TV way back when. I did news and he did sports. And I ventured into this space, gosh, going on, 7 years now, which is just astonishing to me. And you mentioned video. So video is a big component of everything that I do, which is one of the reasons that I'm so excited about doing the show, in addition to the fact that I get to do it with you. But I love video as a medium to communicate with an audience, because I always joked that, you know, once email really took over, you'd get an email or you'd get a text message and you wonder, what was the tone intended there? Mm-hmm. But with video, you always know. I mean, your personality is your personality. So whether you are funny or witty or dry or very intense, that comes across on camera, and it allows you to connect with your audience in a new and different way.
I love that. You know, it's been really a great learning process for me, because I'm somebody who has not done a lot of video up until recently, and it's like a little uncomfortable sort of burying yourself. I've been able to sort of hide behind my computer for so long that suddenly putting my face out there so that everyone can see, you know, there's no time for me to think about it. It's like people can see what I'm thinking and I have to say something reasonably quickly.
Right.
So it's just a completely different way of communicating, but it's really refreshing. I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Well, I've always enjoyed it because the additional component there as well is the storytelling aspect. So when I first started doing video in this space, a number of years ago, realized that YouTube was this thing and people were starting to use it in a different way. It wasn't just for kitten videos. And I thought, well, what a great opportunity for me to start telling stories, whether that is a story about parenting or doing an editorial about something I'd seen in the news or talking to my kids. So you have the opportunity to document, you have the opportunity to do show and tell. If you are someone who's into DIY, or you are into food, or you can put together something crafty or engineering. There are things that are so beyond my comprehension, but with YouTube being your number two search engine, when you Google now how to make a great green bean casserole, you're not only going to get the recipe, you're going to get the YouTube video that someone is going to walk you step by step through it. So when someone says to you, add a pinch, they're going to show you what a pinch looks like. And when they say sift the flour, they're going to show you what a sifter looks like and how many times you should really sift as compared to just reading the recipe now.
So it's great, because I've been doing more video content around food, and there is no way to describe things as easily as you can via video. You know, I'm like, I could write a recipe that takes 5 pages, or I could do a 3-minute video and it shows the same, it shows exactly the same process,
exactly. But
it just gets to the point faster. And you know, you mentioned your kids, and it made me start thinking about how natural a thing wanting to be on film often is for kids. And even when I was little, I remember very clearly, the first video camera I was ever introduced to, my uncle had one when I was like 4 or 5 years old. And I was oh my gosh, I was just so fascinated by the idea that I could record myself and then see myself later. It was like I was so drawn to it. And I see that with my kids too. Like they love to make videos on the phone and, you know, they're just so – they're so into that idea of capturing themselves, like the essence of themselves. It's really cool to watch.
And what a great opportunity for us to have video of them for later on. I mean, the other night we spent probably – an hour just sitting and going through old videos of my kids from, you know, 3-4 years ago. My kids got a puppy for Christmas 4 years ago now. And we must have watched that video 6 times, just over and over and over again. Look at how tiny the puppy was. Look at how cute the kids were. Wow. Cooper just kept saying, wowie zowie, it's the exact puppy I wanted. And, you know, it's so funny because he was 3, right? Mm-hmm. And you just think, you can't make that stuff up and you can't duplicate it. And so we have those moments that are always captured. But it's also a great way to start a conversation. It's a great way to say, this is what I see going on in the world. This is a question I have. This is my opinion, and invite people to join that conversation. And what's beautiful about the way Google is now venturing into this Hangout on Air space is they keep evolving that platform. So originally when you and I were talking about doing the Google Hangouts on Air, it really was strictly a show format. So we would talk and we would broadcast and people would have the opportunity to watch it later on. Now it's interactive. And people can actually comment to us or engage with us in the middle of the show, which I love. That your audience can say, you know what, Megan, Danielle, I totally disagree with you. You know what? That's a great point. Hey, you know what? I've got a question on this. And, you know, it gives us the opportunity for in the future, if we wanted to bring in a guest, bring in someone else to talk on a particular topic, you know, in the spring, if there was something, you know, if there was a particularly timely topic, you know, we can bring in other people to have these conversations. And the audience can say, wait, I've got access to someone. I've got access to the person that I wanted to ask a question of. Mm-hmm. And I love that.
Me too. And you know what, something I was thinking about when we first started doing these, we've done a few that before we started the new Having It All show, we had done a few other hangouts and just kind of toyed with it. And it's like part of me, and I'm sure part of other people who are used to having this very polished and professional sort of image, it's a little scary because it is an emerging technology. And so you have to put yourself out there on air before you can figure it out. Like there's really no way to know how to use it until you use it. And the only way to use it is to put yourself out there. So it can feel a little bit frightening because it's not going to be perfect. But I think that we're moving toward maybe a world, especially an online world, where people want to see the bumps and they don't necessarily want everything to be totally perfect. And, you know, and they don't want – the polish doesn't have to be there, even though I think it's good that we're prepared and we want it to be quality. It's kind of fun being on in this experimental space and doing something that not a lot of people are doing yet and just kind of going with it and seeing where Google's going with it and, you know, what's the next platform going to be or the next way improvement or innovation that happens.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see what they do next. And it's because they've continued to improve and because they continue to change. And for people like you and I, that process can be a little bit painful because every time we jump on, there's what we're used to seeing on the back end is a little bit different, or it provides for that element of live TV when we are broadcasting because we get to say, ooh, we didn't know that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I hope everybody gets to see that. And it there really is that learning curve, but I think that they will continue to expand. I think the quality will continue to improve.
And, yeah, I think you're right.
And we'll continue to learn. You know, one of the things that I saw right away when I watched back was that I was just using my webcam, which is obviously something that you can do. And then you were using a much better camera. So guess who's already ordered that camera, you know, just so that I can do that and I can hook that up because I prefer the better quality. I mean, there's such a marked difference between your appearance and mine in that platform. And I thought, well, that's silly because I would prefer that we give people the very best quality that we can.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it is that balancing. And by the way, I will have a link in the show notes, which will be thekitchenhour.com/episode15 to the show. So you can see the first episode. And I think by the time this goes live next week, maybe the second episode will be up as well. So, definitely check that out. And I want to talk a little bit more about the title of the show, the new Having It All show, and what that means to us. But I want to back up a little bit first because I think that there might be something in your history that will help kind of illustrate what that means to you, Danielle. So let's back up a little bit to your life in television before kids. Now, did you completely stop doing live TV when Or I'm assuming you did live TV. You were a newscaster, right?
Yes.
Okay. So did you stop doing that when you had children, or did you continue to do both for a while?
I had stopped before I had kids.
You had stopped before you had kids.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about that world. And then you have kids. And I'm assuming there was probably a point at which you were wondering if there was a way to blend those two worlds.
Right.
And maybe finding that in your old career, there really wasn't, or there really wasn't unless you were willing to make a lot of sacrifices. So please just tell us about that.
Okay. Well, so here's what's really interesting is that it was a career that both Jeff and I had, both my husband and I had. And one of the reasons that I got out was that I, never mind the fact that it doesn't pay well and that you're required to move around from, you know, to move your way up. So you move from one small city to another small city to a medium city to, you know, to hopefully moving on up.
The big time.
I don't have the constitution to do traditional news, traditional hard news on a daily basis. Meaning I'm not good at knocking on your door and saying, I'm so sorry your three-year-old drowned in the bathtub. Would you like to talk about it?
Right.
And I use that phrase as an example, not to be flippant, but because that was actually an experience that I had. And while I would never phrase anything that way, that's where a lot of reporters have to get to. You have to be tough enough, mentally tough enough to be able to walk up to a grieving parent and say, I'm sorry about your loss, but I know you want to talk about it, and here's why. And the theory behind wanting to talk about it is sharing your story will somehow help another parent from experiencing the same tragedy. I mean, that's the crux of it. But I didn't have it in me. I wasn't good at it. And when I was at my last TV station, I got into an argument with our assignment editor, who's the person that tells you what jobs to do, and you're supposed to just nod and move on. And there was a golfer, a very well-known golfer from Springfield, Missouri, where I lived at the time, who died. His name was Payne Stewart. And some of your listeners may remember the story because this was going on, you know, 12, 14 years ago now. And it was being reported on CNN that Payne was in a plane that was flying unmanned. And my assignment editor instantly said, call B, his mom. And I said, absolutely not. I'm not going to call this woman and say, I think your son is flying in a plane that's unmanned. Therefore, he's very likely dead. I'm so sorry to hear that. Would you like to talk about it? Because that's really what you're saying.
Right.
And I don't ever want to be the person that tells someone, especially a non-family member, that someone in their family has passed away. And so my assignment editor kept saying, call B, and I kept saying no. And he kept saying, call B, and I kept saying no. And I turned my back and sat at my desk. And about 3 minutes later, I hear this panicked Danielle, like whispered voice. And I turn around and there is a 17-year-old intern standing on our assignment desk who is crying because he has been told to call. And he's looking at me and he's like, they don't know. They don't know. So he's on the phone with the family and he has just said, CNN is reporting. And so I said, give me the phone. And I got on the phone and she said, I don't understand what's happening. And it was Payne's sister. And I said, I am so sorry to be the one to tell you this. But unfortunately, at the moment, CNN is reporting that Payne is on a flight that is flying unmanned. And she said, that's impossible. Payne is on his way to Spain. I get chills every time I tell a story. He's flying on his way to Spain right now. And then she turns away, like moves the phone away from her mouth and says, Mom, Payne's on his way to Spain, right? And I hear B say, no. And she let out that sound like that you see in the movies that people make when they have just found out that a family member has died.
Right.
And she said, I've got to go. And I said, I'm so sorry. And she hung up. And I thought, this isn't for me. This isn't what I'm supposed to do. So knowing that was a big tip for me. My husband, on the other hand, always did sports and always wanted to stick with it. But for him, there was the big juggle of having it all. So can he do a job that he loves deep in his soul that doesn't pay as well, that pulls him away from his family? Because if he's doing sports play-by-play or he's a sportscaster, if he's on ESPN or he's calling college football games or Major League Baseball games, he's gone a lot. So he's not going to be at the kids every baseball game and every basketball game and every softball game. So choosing TV is a very hard one to juggle. But, and you and I have talked about this, what is your definition of having it all? And for me, having it all means being as present as I can when I'm here, still traveling when the time comes up, and and showing my kids what it likes to be both a present mother and a woman who didn't give up on her own dreams and still do something that makes her still does something that makes her happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And it's kind of an extreme example because
right.
TV, at least the way that you were in it, and oh my gosh, that story gave me chills and I mean, we could go many different directions with yes. that story. But you know, one of them being like, was it really important that this, you know, that you get a comment from the person when it's, you know, like, does there need to be a comment on this at that point? But
yes.
Anyway, but you know, something that extreme is so much different. And that's sometimes what kind of frustrates me a little bit about this discussion. I feel like when people start talking about this, can women have it all or can anyone have it all? The things that they're putting up as the examples of people trying are so extreme. Like, mm-hmm. I know a lot of working moms and they have jobs like teacher or nurse or, you know, they work at a bank or they work at a store or whatever. And they have very balanced lives as much as you can. And I know we've talked about balance and how, you know, how much of a fallacy that can be that every day can be balanced. But overall, like over the course of a year, let's say, they have a nice rhythm between family and work. But I feel like the stories that are hyped up in the media are people who are in these high up positions that 90% of us are never going to be in anyway. So it's like, it's kind of a false argument that's being thrown up. I feel like that most of us aren't even in that world, don't even want to be in that world. If we wanted to be, we would be living very different lives already than right. the lives that we're choosing to live.
Absolutely. And I think that that's a big part of it. But I think that and I think my husband and I even are different examples of the having it all because he has a job that is not number one on his list of this is the job I wanted to grow up to do. But his priority is being at the kids' games and right. coaching as many sports as he can. And the job that he has does something for his psyche, which is provides for his family in a way that he wants to provide. Mm-hmm. And allows him that luxury of being present at everything. And it's funny because he and I have different ideas of what parenting looks like. I think it's okay if you miss an occasional game. He doesn't. Right. He doesn't. He's not okay. He is physically sick to his stomach if he misses anything.
Yeah, so that's obviously one of the ways that he feels it's really important for him to connect with the kids. I mean, that's for him, that's a priority. And for me, it's like cooking dinner. Like it's really, and that's something that didn't used to be really important to me, but now it's just become part of our rhythm. Right. So it's really important to me that that's part of my evening. But not everybody has the same priority and that's fine. I mean, not everybody, you know, everybody experiences this differently and everybody, to me, it's about where is the, what is your motivation? Is it obligation? Do you feel like you should just because there's some arbitrary reason you should? Or do you feel that you want to do something because deep down it's where you really feel convicted to be? And I think there's a big difference between those two things because there's so many shoulds in the world. If you try to take on everybody else's shoulds and everybody else's priorities, you cannot possibly
get it all,
you know.
Well, yeah. And your should isn't necessarily my should. Right. And I think that's, you know, it's funny because there's, we talked about this in the first show we did, you know, what Pinterest has done to our psyche a little bit because Pinterest is designed for inspiration in theory mm-hmm. and for us to have these online vision boards that inspire us or give us ideas for decorating our home or planting a garden or creating a recipe but it's also created this space where we feel competitive to a degree, you know, look at what someone's doing for their house and look at the bento boxes that they do for their kids for school lunches every day. And it gives us this, it can give us a less than feeling or a not enough feeling. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's really important to define for yourself, what does enough look like to you? And right. where can you say, this is where I'm stellar and this is where I'm not stellar. You know, it's Christmas. I love decorating for Christmas. I love, love, love decorating for Christmas. Almost all the other holidays are like, eh. And there are people in our neighborhood who have wreaths up for St. Patrick's Day and they have something fancy up for Easter and they get, you know, this up for Halloween. And I keep thinking, am I supposed to do that? Are my kids missing out because I am not appropriately decorated for every holiday? Right. And then I think, you know what? It's the traditions that my kids remember. My kids are not going to look back and say, I cannot believe my mother did not put a wreath up for St. Patrick's Day. I cannot believe that we did not wake up every, you know, St. Patrick's Day morning with the milk turned green. I cannot believe she did not.
Well, and it's not, it's Valentine's Day too is a big one. I'm like, I'm sorry. I can't get into Valentine's Day. Nothing against people who do. It's just, I just don't have it in me. I don't have enough decorations for it.
Well, exactly. And you know what I did? I made cards for the kids last year. And it was one of the first times that I've ever done that. Normally we just buy them and they sign their names. And this last year I was like, I will make cute cards, darn it. And I took pictures and cutouts and lollipops and they were adorable. And I made way too many. And then I had a whole bunch left over. And then I was crabby that I had a whole bunch left over. But keep in mind, too, that who made all the Valentine's Day cards? I did. My kids didn't have anything to do with it. So whose celebration of Valentine's Day in their classroom is that? And those go home. And guess what? The other parents see that. That isn't for the kids. The kids don't get it and go, look at how cute Cooper and Delaney are. It's so personal. The other parents get it and say, like,
why didn't I do that? Yeah, totally. And yet, you know, that's, I think that there can be that one upsmanship. And also, it also kind of sets up like false competitions as well, because it's kind of like, you know, the, and I'm so over this that I can't even say how over it I am, but it's like kind of like how I used to feel about the working mom versus stay-at-home mom debate, you know, 10 years ago or 15 years ago when I still cared, is that I would see it as a better versus worse kind of a situation. Like one must be better and one must be worse. But when you really look at it, and then I would spend a lot of time trying to figure out which one was better and which one was worse, like so that I could feel better about what I was doing, whatever it was at the time, because I was working and I was also not working and in and out. But if you look at it now, there's so many opinions online at any given day. So like, here's a really ridiculous example of the Pinterest thing, okay? I was looking at kitchens and I fell down the rabbit hole, as you do, on Pinterest and ended up clicking to the site that was all about retro renovations. Well, at the time, I was really into the idea of open shelving. And like sort of this like unfitted, you know, sort of pre-1930s look in my kitchen. And I stumbled on this site that was all about mid-century kitchens and how much they love Formica and, you know, wall-to-wall cabinetry and all this stuff. And I actually, I'm not going to say guilt because that would be such a ridiculous word to feel, guilt. But I actually felt like sort of maybe that my thinking about having like open shelving and sort of a more like turn of the century look was wrong. Like it actually crossed my mind. Like maybe I'm wrong. And then I'm like, that's stupid. I mean, it luckily only lasted about half a second.
Good.
But it just goes to show you what can happen when you're surrounded by so many opinions about things, because people can be so passionate about whatever they're into. And this person was so passionate about mid-century kitchens that I actually felt like I should be too. Even though I don't really care that much about mid-century kitchens.
Isn't that funny?
It's bizarre.
But we do that though.
Nobody is immune. We all do it to ourselves, you know?
Yes.
And like, or like paleo eating versus, you know, like vegan eating or whatever. I mean, you'll see recipes, paleo, and another one comes up, vegan. I'm like, which one am I? They're so opposite. They're the complete opposite.
Oh my gosh,
I can't possibly be both. So
yes.
It's. Yeah.
Well, and it's funny too, because we make allowances for different things. I have a girlfriend that comes and stays with me. Her mom lives about an hour away from St. Louis. And so always the holidays, she stops by to see us on her way to see her mom. Mm-hmm. And my husband said, so are you guys going to go out to dinner? And I said, absolutely. I'm not cooking for her. Like she's eating a new way again. Mm-hmm. I don't. And she's paleo right now. Right. And I don't know how to cook paleo. And when I said that to her, she said, oh, I'm so easy. Paleo is so easy. And I said, right. But it is for you. It's not for me and it's not for my kids. Like my kids don't eat paleo. And so cooking a meal for my husband and my kids and me and one that would satisfy her does not work. Mm-hmm. So I was like, we will go out to dinner and she can order whatever she wants. It will be fantastic. You know, so we make these adjustments because it's great that's the route she's taken. It's just not one that my kids would cotton to at the moment.
Right. Yeah, no, totally. And I think sometimes too, it's like there's ways to, my brother, and his family, well, my brother and my sister-in-law, have been vegetarian for about a year, but the way they did it, I mean, they'll just like go with the flow. So if they come over and I've made food, you know, and there is meat in the main dish, but there's vegetables and bread, they'll eat the vegetables and bread and it's easy. But it's my brother. It's different when you've got, you know, it's right. Like, it's different when you're someone you're not around as much or you don't really know if what you have to offer is okay. And it can be very complicated. So I think going out to eat was probably the smartest choice. The funny thing is she probably got something and you're looking at what she ordered and you're like, oh, I could have made that.
Oh gosh, no. No, she ordered some, like, it was, we went to a restaurant around here that actually has more of a green, it's more farm to table, which okay. I actually love. You know, I love that kind of thing. I just haven't mastered how to incorporate it into my home the same way. Mm-hmm, and right. While I feel as though we make any healthy choices in our home, I certainly, my kids still eat things that don't rank high on the healthy list.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm okay with that. And yeah, and I too. Think that that's part of recognizing my having it all, because if I wanted to have it all and I was making all of our own bread and I was making all of our own juices and I was making our, like, something else would have to give, because really, in fact, right. there are only so many hours in a day. So what right. does my version of having it all look like? I remember things, you know, I think about things from my childhood. Like, I knew exactly which houses were the ones where the kids had no food. Like, there was nothing good to eat there, nothing at all. And then the kids mm-hmm. who had everything, because my house was very moderated. We Mine had some snacks, but they were a very special occasion. I was allowed like sips of 7-Up when I was sick, you know, but right. like there was no regular soda in my house. My dad could have soda, but that was it. And so but I knew whose houses we could go to that they had cabinets and pantries full of every treat and every treasure and yep. everything. And then I also knew whose house only had vegetables. You know right, what I mean? And so right.
Yes, absolutely.
I want my kids to know that there is moderation, that there's right. that it's okay. And that's the moderation to me is the same as having it all. Because yeah, I know you're totally that right. I can't have, it's like having a buffet. I can't have everything in front of me at the exact same time.
Totally.
I can't possibly hold it.
It's so funny. My husband has this memory of a friend of his who I think he only was friends with for like 2 years. And it was in that awkward elementary school age where it's kind of sometimes you forget all about things that happened then or people even, you know, it's like 8 or 9. Like some memories are really clear and some just, psh, they're gone. And he has a really bad memory in general about his childhood. But this one thing he'll say to me, like, there's this one thing I remember. I had this friend and his mom would buy Suzy Q's and she would freeze them. And the freezer was always exactly. stuffed with Suzy Q's. And then they would just go over there during the summer and have just like a gorge fest of frozen Suzy Q's. And I just, I'm laughing. I'm like, so of all your childhood memories, that's what stuck.
You're like,
it's like,
exactly. Yes. Because at some point he probably yeah. felt deprived. At some point,
oh, I'm sure. Felt yes.
as though there were, because we never, I mean, I didn't grow up in a house that had ding dongs and Twinkies. So no, when I went to either. Someone else's house and they had ding dongs and Twinkies, I was like, that is just amazing.
Yeah. You're like, wait, you can have that whenever you want.
Like there is a pantry that has those. Like, it's like yeah. magic. And
yeah.
I don't buy them. Do you know, that's just not right. one of those things that I buy. I mean, and that's not to say that I would forbid my children from having them. But I don't regularly say, here, have a Twinkie. And so yeah. it's funny because and this is where the line in the sand comes for me too. My daughter was on a different soccer team this fall than she has been in the past. And we could go in a different tangent here too, because my secondary tangent to this is I very strongly believe that not everybody should get a trophy. Like, I very strongly believe in that.
Well, yeah.
So, but on this particular team, that was more of the mentality. And they were like, okay, well, here's a sheet. You can sign up for snacks. I'm like, snacks? They're in fourth grade. My son's second grade team hasn't done snacks in 2 years. You know, because there are so many other things that, like, I get doing snacks because you're trying to keep the kids interested when they're in, like, preschool and kindergarten. I get that. But as they get a little bit older, they're supposed to be there and you're not supposed to reward them for paying attention to their coach. They're supposed to pay attention to their coach because that's what they do. And so it was, I said, how about this? Delaney just won't have any of the snacks after game. And the next game, the mom forgot to bring snacks, so she took everybody to the concession stand and bought everybody soda. And then the time after that, it was the game ended at 8 o'clock on a Friday night, and they were given Twinkies and sodas.
Oh, boy.
And I thought, right after a soccer game, I don't – this is why I don't do snacks. Like, I don't.
Well, and you know what? And this is a total another tangent. I have a friend, a good friend, Denise Schiappone, and she was on the show last year on this podcast, and she has a blog, and her blog is Mean Mom's Rule. She has a book by the same name. And she's not a mean mom, but she's just very straightforward and sort of like no nonsense in the way I think our parents probably were, and maybe we are too. But she got me thinking about this because I really had never thought about it. But she wrote a post one day. She's like, what is up with snacks? Like, why does there have to be all this portable food all the time? And I thought about that. That did not happen when we were kids. Sorry. Like, when I went to the park, my mom didn't bring along, you know, a container full of Cheerios for me.
No.
Or like, you know, if I had a practice after school, if it was, I might have an apple in my bag that I could like use to tide me over, but I just went to the practice. It was like an hour long. I had a lot of stuff that was like right after school. Mm-hmm. You would just go to it and then go home and eat. I mean, it wasn't like, there wasn't this need to have some nutrients or calories with you to get you through every single experience of your life.
But
it was just so different.
I think a lot of it is that our kids are trained to eat to dissuade them from being bored.
Oh, you're totally because right.
Because think about the number of times that I have seen parents pull out snacks in church.
Yeah.
Or like, here, eat this, be quiet.
Right, you know,
it's a distraction mechanism. And so what happens now is the second my kids get to a game that is not their own, they want a snack. Hey, I'm hungry. No, you're not hungry. You're fidgety. You're bored. Like you want something to do because this isn't all about you. You're going to have to deal with it. And part of that, you know, it's my husband's parents always come to the game, and grandparents get to provide treats, and they do. Mm-hmm. So the second my husband's parents come, the kids go running up to them. They want gum. They want whatever she's got in her purse. They want a dollar to go to the concession stand. I say no. I mean, to me, the concession stand is there for like a really hot July day when somebody needs something to drink, or, you know, and we're at tournaments, or we need to grab something in between games. Like, a concession stand is not just a, hey, go get some licorice because you're bored.
Yeah. Well, and it's not just food anymore either. I mean, whenever, you know, I remember when bottled water became a thing.
Right.
I was in high school. It was like a big thing. When I think I had my first bottle of Aquafina, I was like, oh my God, I never knew water could taste so delicious.
I love that you remember that. So, that's really funny.
Yes. And then I sort of fell into that habit where, you know, my car would have 8 million water, like half-drunk water bottles rattling around in it, and the kids couldn't make it 5 minutes in the car without water. And finally I said, we're not buying – first of all, the whole bottled water industry is – let's just face it, it's a scam. I mean, I like it, but it's a scam. So they're basically selling us tap water. And if you think about, you know, how ridiculous that would have sounded to my parents 20 or 30 years ago, that one day we'd be spending more on bottled water than milk.
Right, exactly.
or in some cases on gasoline. So anyway, I finally was like, we're not buying bottled water anymore. We don't need to be adding more plastic to the environment. We don't need it. We can make it. Unless we're like on a road trip. No, not right. happening. I mean like a long road trip, you know. It's not going to happen. And it's funny, everyone was kind of like, but I'm so thirsty for like the first, I don't know, a few times we did it. And then they just learned that there actually is no source of water in our car.
Right.
There's no tap. There's no water fountain. They were going to, and they lived. It was going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, they get conditioned to a certain way of interacting with food. And it does get harder when they get older. You lose some of that control. But I think my mom had a really good approach, because I remember very clearly when I turned like maybe 9 or 10 and my mom gave me the freedom to be able to go further on my bike. Mm-hmm. And then the rule became, if you find a quarter and you can get yourself to the corner store, not a Little Debbie, whatever the other. Oh yeah. Little Debbie's were quarters then. And so if I had the wherewithal to go find a quarter, get on my bike and ride the 7 blocks, you know, to the corner store, I could buy a fudge round or Swiss rolls. And okay, sometimes I did, you know, right. But it wasn't like that passive, like nom, 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 basket full of junk
right.
kind of an approach. And that's what I've tried to do with my kids. Like, as they've gotten older and more independent, I've just been like, okay, you know, I know I can't keep you from snacking all the time. That's you're getting older. It's your prerogative to some degree, but you're going to have to work for it. And you have to get on your, I'm not feeding this stuff to you, you know?
No, I agree.
So, yeah. So, well, we've been on this subject for a while. And I think that we could possibly go down this for forever and ever, but we only have about 10 minutes left. So I wanted to kind of back up again into, we were talking about careers. And that's such a loaded topic and there's just so much to say, and it's about priorities and about values and about what works in your family and for you. But I'm so fascinated by this idea. I'm teaching a class right now, and one of my students said something to me recently that she had just turned 40 and that she was, and she's been a stay-at-home mom for maybe, I don't know, 5 or 10 years or something. And she's always seen herself as someone who is going to have a big second act. And I loved that so much. And it made me think of a conversation you and I had about the year that you were turning 40, or when you turned 40, and how you had kind of decided, yeah, this year, that you'd talk to your husband about this being your time.
Yes.
And how that's another way of having it all. So talk about that a little bit.
Gosh, I love that. And it's funny because I've been doing some reassessing, because I think, you know, did I allow this year to live up to the expectation that I had for it? And in a way I did, in a way I didn't, but I do love the idea of reinvention and rebirth, because there is nothing that says that we're done at any given time. There's nothing that says a career choice is permanent, or a decision to start creating is set in stone. And I love the fact, especially in the space where we are, Megan, that creation is bountiful. We can continue to evolve, and we can continue to develop partnerships and meet other like-minded people and figure out what's right. I would say part of my biggest challenge in this second act, if you will, is staying on track, because I get so excited about so many things that I think I could do this and I could do that and I could go here and I could go there. And oh, that's really hectic. Yeah. And I remember, you know, you and Sarah talking at one point at Bloggy Bootcamp, and Sarah said, you know, if she had searched her email for your assistant there, if she had searched her email for, I have this great idea, how many emails would come up. And
I think it was actually, I have this crazy idea.
Okay. Yeah.
They're not always great, but they're pretty much always crazy.
Okay. Well, either way, crazy and great, yeah, sometimes they're synonymous, because it's, right, you know, I was watching a video the other day, and it's from code.org, and it was talking about how only 1 in 10 schools in the United States teaches coding to kids. And in one of the big firms that they profiled, whether it was Dropbox or Facebook, in one of their offices, they have a big wall, and on it, it says, what would you do if you weren't afraid? And I think that's why people are afraid of turning 40, because they think it's the end of some kind of it's like an invisible ceiling, or a line that we're not supposed to cross, or that something has changed so fundamentally that we have to stop doing or being a little bit of who we are. Whereas I think it's a new beginning to a degree, because I wouldn't want to go back to being 25. I mean, I suppose there are a couple things in me I might take at 25, but yeah,
but not the whole package.
And you know what? Probably less than 20%. Mm-hmm. I like me better now than I liked me at 25. I am more confident. I'm stronger. I'm happy with the trajectory. I have a wonderful family. I've created something in this online space that I'm very proud of. And I couldn't say any of that at 25. And so I like that I am surrounded by people who continue to support this emergence and rebirth in me and in so many of us, that there are so many of us who believe that continuing to get older is a good thing, because because there's so much wisdom that comes with it.
Yeah, there is. And you know what? I think too, one of the really wonderful things about the time that we live in and the space that you and I are in, that's available to everybody now. I mean, I know we're pioneers in a way. We've been doing this for a while, but now truly anybody with an internet connection can try these things. It's not just, you know, you don't have to be sort of the first person in to be doing this. And it's not too late, I guess, is what I'm saying. The bus has not.
Oh gosh, no.
Gone away. But one thing I love about it is that the limits that maybe once were very real aren't there anymore. Like, I remember the first time I got on the internet. I was 20 years old. I had dropped out of college and I had a 3-month-old baby. This was the first time I really got online, like, for real. Mm-hmm. Like, I had a home internet connection. And I sat down and I remember, you know, I was in such a tough place. I was waitressing and going to college, trying to go to college, but not really doing a very good job of it, and trying to raise this baby, and we were broke. And it was just like, it was a very rough time in my life. And I just sat down and I started a GeoCities website, and it had like a bunch of tildes in it. And it was like GeoCities/blah, blah, blah. And I remember thinking, I can do anything. It was the craziest feeling, like ultimate power, freedom, like, and there are no boundaries. I can do anything I want with this space. I can reach anybody I want. I can, and I had no idea at that point what I wanted to do. And it took me, you know, 10 more years to figure it out, really. But I could, I had that ability to do anything I wanted with that space. And it's like talking about something like video or TV or radio, even, you know, what we're doing right now, there would have been a point 20 or 30 years ago where you would have aged out.
Right.
Unless you were established. You know, there was no second act available in that same way.
No.
Where you could just create something out of thin air. And so doors did close to a lot of people that now really aren't closed. And it doesn't matter where you live. It doesn't matter how much money you have or, you know, what demographic you're in or anything or who you know, because you can meet anybody you want. I know all these, like, I go to my Facebook page or my Facebook profile. Half the people that I'm friends with are in New York. I mean, how did that happen? I live in Michigan. You know, that never would have happened before. So it's just, I don't know. It's so, it has its ups and downs, and there's definitely the downsides that come along with the upsides. But man, I'm looking forward to the next 10 or 20 years of my life. I'm like you. I don't want to go back. And not only that, but I see so much possibility, and I think the possibilities are just going to continue to grow.
Exactly.
In every way.
See, and that's exactly how I feel about it. I think that there is, when I look at, you know, today Babbel released their top 100 list of bloggers, and I was fascinated and just really fascinated by how few of them I knew, which is, and you know, it's amazing about that is that shows you how many other people are creating this new act for themselves. Because there are that many people doing what we do at an amazing quality level. And I love that. It just gave me that many more people to explore and that many more people to learn about. And it just is a greater illustration for everyone else who is looking for what to do and how to do it. It's just another example of how to create community in the space and how to do it well.
I think you're so right. And you know, I've been, this thought has been rattling around in my brain for a while, but it actually has a television sort of analogy. So I'm going to use it now. Remember how, like, in the old days, and I think of this when in the old days, before we were, you know, before our time, I guess, when local TV channels were their own thing, like you would have your local dance show and it was competitive with something like, what was the one that was really big with Dick Clark? I'm like totally blanking. Like the teenage show.
Oh, the Soul Train. Was it Soul Train?
Or whatever was before Soul Train. I can't remember now. I'm going to get off of here and be like, I can't believe I forgot that.
Yeah, but, well, clearly I'm doing the same thing. But
everybody knows what I'm talking about. American Bandstand. Okay. So you had American Bandstand, but then every local market had its own version of American Bandstand. And then over the years, those disappeared. And everything became kind of mass. And when that happened, everything became kind of watered down and sort of like, I don't know, just, I guess, neutral to like sort of, I think, a boring degree. You know, it was like they didn't have the local flavor anymore of those local channels. And I feel like now what's happening is that it's not necessarily based on where you are demographically, but people are now, we're going back in that direction where people are able to have those smaller niches and make a real thing out of it, like a real vibrant audience or viewership or a readership or community based around your specific, you know, thoughts or ideas or what it is that you bring to the table or whatever your opinions are, whatever it is you've got. It's almost like we're going back in that direction where there's all these little satellite, you know, like, so like with your example with those bloggers that I'd never heard of most, I think there were three people on that list I knew. Three. Out of 100. And that's saying a lot.
I want to say there were about 5 that I knew. Yeah. And I was fascinated.
But they all have thriving communities of their own that we don't even know.
Exactly.
It's crazy.
And I love, but so, I love it. I love that there is that new and upcoming, and it gives credence to people who are working really hard, wondering whether or not it's still possible to dive into the space. The answer is yes. Look,
yeah,
you know, I mean, there are, yep, there are, you know, 95 reasons out there, because if I knew five, and there are five people on that list that I have met at conferences and have been around for the last, you know, number of years, or at least have been in the space to some degree, there's 95 people out there who are in some capacity fairly new-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not the first person. I mean, like, I've talked to a couple people about this today. I've heard, you know, people say a number of times, like, wow, there's a lot of people on that list I don't know. So it's not confined to just you and I saying, hey, we don't know a lot of these people.
Right.
And it's, but I love that. I love that they really created a way to say, here are some new and upcoming people. Here are some people you need to pay attention to. If you don't already know them, you should.
I love that. Well, we need to start wrapping up, but I think that from this conversation, which has been fabulous, and also it took us in a lot of directions I really didn't expect for us to go at the beginning.
I know.
So it was really fun. I just feel like sort of the things that have sort of tied this conversation together are that, I mean, to have it all, whatever that means for you, first you have to define what that means for you. And if there's no way to get the balance that you're, or the, you know, the different things and priorities that are important to you in the life that you currently have now, you still have the ability to change it and create something totally new. And I think that that's a fabulous message for anyone, moms or otherwise, who feel stuck with what circumstances they feel like they, you know, have to go with. Maybe that's not the case. And I know that you and I are both in the lifestyle space online, but I have to imagine no matter what you're in, whether it's medicine or politics or anything, there's a place for you to make your own way.
I agree.
And create your own thing.
I definitely agree. I think that's the beauty of, it's the beauty of the time we live in. So you don't even have to be in the online space to create. You can, right, certainly use the tools that are available in the online,
yes,
space to help build what it is you want to do, but you don't have to create in the online space. I think it's,
you don't have to be a blogger.
Right. Oh gosh, no. And I think there are so many different ways that you can create a life that makes you happy. But like you said, you have to know what that is. And
right,
if you don't know what, I mean, it's kind of like the first step is admitting it, you know, that's the big part of it, is you really have to acknowledge whether or not you know. And if you don't know, spend some time ruminating on that. And there right, are times when I know both you and I have had to do that, whether that's, you know, hiding under our desk or going into a dark room or asking to be left alone for a while so that we can just sit and think, because mm-hmm, sometimes we don't know.
Yeah. And it is a process, and you can always make little choices, and then you can always take a few steps back and try a different path. It's not, you know, it's not like whatever the step that you take, you're cemented into that step either, which is another nice thing about where we are now, that you can make a large impact with a small investment, and, you know, then you can toy with it. So it's exciting. It's exciting. And I hope that anybody who's inspired, to look into this more will check out our show. It is called The New Having It All Show. It's Wednesdays at 1 o'clock Eastern, 12 Central. It's on Google Plus. If you're not on Google Plus, what I'm going to do in the show notes is put a link to the way that you can find us. And we'll figure out what the best way that is for people who aren't on Google Plus, because I know not everybody is, and it can get a little tricky tracking the show down. And if you watch it live, you can interact with us during the show. You can ask questions. If you watch it later on YouTube, well, you can just watch us. But you could also put a question on YouTube.
Absolutely. And we can always follow up with that on our next show. I mean, I would like to have that relationship with the community, that people feel as though they can ask us a question and say, hey, you know what? I'd love for you guys to address. And we can add that into our editorial calendar. You know, hey, that's a great topic. That's something, you know.
That is a great
topic. I love the idea of interacting that way.
Yeah. And while you're there, while you're checking out the video, if you see it on YouTube, you can look at Danielle's YouTube channel, which has a lot of great content. Did you wrap up your Year of Style series yet, Danielle, or is that still in process?
Wrapped up for right now. I'm taking a break on that because I'm relaunching the site. So.
Okay.
Since I'm relaunching.
But you did, like, how many videos did you do? A whole bunch.
Yes. I mean, I did. Like, I started last December and I went all the way through this November. And I actually still have a couple that I've hung on to that I haven't that I haven't shown yet, just because I wanted to have that new content for when the site relaunches. So
got it. Okay. Well, they're great. I mean, she's got everything from, I mean, food to crafting to how to get your hair to stay curled. That was one I remember.
Well, the idea was that was always everything lifestyle oriented. Everything
helps you lifestyle oriented.
Your life in some way, whether it's home or family or fashion or beauty or
food. And they're beautifully done, and the videos are very nice. So check those out. I'll also have a link to those in the show notes, which again is thekitchenhour.com/episode15. Well, everyone, it has been great being here. Danielle, thank you so much. I really appreciate this, and this was a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was lots of fun.
Well, that's it for this week's episode of the Kitchen Hour podcast. Thanks so much for letting me come into your home, into your phone, into your computer, however it is you're listening to this podcast. I really appreciate you listening in. And I hope you really enjoyed the episode and this interview with Danielle Smith. I had a great time recording it. Just love talking to Danielle. She has so many interesting things to say about her past and her future and all the things in between and media and video. And so inspiring. Remember that our show, the new Having It All show, is live on Wednesday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern. And you can also see it after it records. You can watch it on YouTube. I will post links to both the live broadcast, where you can go to find that, and to the YouTube channel where it will be in today's show notes, which is thekitchenhour.com/episode15. So check it out. I hope you'll come see what Danielle and I are up to in the new Having It All show. And I'll see you here next week.